Hello, and welcome to this week's pre-episode before the real episode, because we're working with a parental brain that listens to the episode they recorded and then remembers the three things they forgot to say during the episode. So we're doing our best. And I have to give you all the information, right? Or else I feel like I didn't do my job. So one thing I forgot to mention in this episode that is so important is newborn fingernails and how scary they are to deal with and to cut. This was something I was unprepared for and did not know what to do. My son had pretty long fingernails when he was born. The idea of taking clippers to these tiny little new fingers and potentially cutting him was so terrifying. So someone gave me, it might have even been my pediatrician, the tip to get a nail buzzer. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but basically it's kind of like this little circular disc that has the sandpaper stuff on it. And when you turn it on, it goes in a circular motion. So it very gently trims the baby's nails, like how they do it at nail salons, kind of. And I got one of those on Amazon that was made for baby. So it's like really, really fine. It's not going to like hurt them at all. My son actually laughs when I do it because it kind of like vibrates his finger and he thinks it's super funny. And I'm going to put the link for that down below in the details, because you will not believe how fast their fingernails grow. It's like I'm trimming them every 4 days. When I don't trim them, they are like these little razor blades that get up into my nose. He has drawn blood. He has cut me accidentally. He cut himself. So that's another part. With the nails, that you want to be aware of is they can actually cut themselves. And like, it's sad when you see the little like red mark on their cheek or something, you know, they cut themselves in the middle of the night by accident. So I would get a lot of the jammies that had the pull over mittens because they worked really well and they didn't fall off. Whereas if you buy the little mitts for their hands, they can fall off. And that's a bummer because you're having to like put these little mitts on them versus the pajamas that have the fold over hand flaps. Big tip, get the fold over hand flaps. Super helpful, and highly recommend this. The next thing I want to talk to you about is a workout ball versus a rocking chair. So when Reef was a baby, I used the blow up inflatable, like you see at the gym, workout balls. And I would use that to rock him to sleep because he was sleeping so often and wanting to be held so often. I didn't want to be trapped in the bedroom all the time in my rocking chair. I really didn't even use my rocking chair that much. In the first few months, I use it more now that he's bigger. But it was like a lifesaver to have this ball that I could just take with me in any room that I went into. And I could hold him because he loved the movement. And I could be sitting in front of the TV. I could be like, sometimes I'd be eating at the table on the ball, bouncing while I was eating. And it was really helpful when we traveled when he was almost 5 months old. And I was able to get it where we traveled, just buy, you know, a cheap workout ball and use that with him versus like, you can't take your rocking chair everywhere with you. So that was also a great tip, super helpful. And he loved bouncing on the ball. And it was great for me because it gave me more freedom. And they're a lot less expensive. So if you're having to choose what to buy at the beginning versus later, go for the workout ball. That would be my recommendation. Another thing I want to talk about is what season your baby is going to be born in. So you want to think about what do I really need for the season of this newborn's life. So my son was born in May in Florida. And so I didn't get the stroller attachment for newborn because I knew like it would be miserable to go on walks with him. There was not an hour of the day where it wasn't like 90 degrees and humid. So we didn't really go on that many walks for the first, especially 2 months, because it was so dang hot. So it wasn't worth me spending hundreds of dollars for that attachment when I wasn't going to use that anyways. And also thinking about, you know, how babies don't grow, like how, like if you buy 0 to 3 months clothes, they might grow out of that like in the first 4 weeks. You don't know how your baby's going to grow. And so you don't want to like buy all this clothes, like a bunch of sweaters for December and a bunch of swims, shorts for June and July, because based off what month old they're going to be, because there's a chance that they're not going to fit into that clothes when, just because it says for, you know, 3 to 6 months. My son was in 12 to 18 month clothes by the time that he was like 8 months old. So I totally missed that. And it was tough because I had bought clothes according to, you know, what it said on the tag, and that didn't work out so well. I'm also going to do a clothing review episode where I go over the different brands of clothes that we bought and what I liked and what I didn't think was so great. Okay, moving right along. This one is important. I wanted to talk about the fact that the newborn stage is a stage that is hard to describe what your day-to-day is going to look like, because it depends on the personality of your baby. But I can say that your baby might want to be held a lot. And that's not even going to do justice to explain how much they actually might want to be held if you have a baby like the baby that I had. So Reef wanted to be held by me pretty much every hour of his life. And I'm not really exaggerating with that. Like, I would go to take a shower for 5 minutes and he would start crying and I'd have to jump out. I was lucky if I got to like wash my hair. There was no like washing my hair and shaving my legs in the same shower. Like, those had to be two separate showers. And it's something you kind of want to research. Like, look up the term carry mammal. I might like totally butcher this trying to explain it, but there's different ranges of protein that you'll find in breast milk or mammal milk. So that level of protein tells you how long that baby can go without the parent or the mother. So animals who have to go and hunt and be away from their young early on, they have really high levels of protein because the baby has to stay full while that parent is away to get food for themselves. So the animal that has the most similar amount of protein in their milk as humans is a kangaroo. And if you think of a kangaroo, their baby is constantly on them, like in their little pouch. And so, you know, compared to like an elephant or a giraffe that are born and they're able to stand up and they have to be ready to run from predators in order to survive, they've just kind of evolved to slide out and figure it out pretty quick and join the herd. With human babies, they are so helpless when they are born. They can't do anything for themselves, and they have an awareness of that. So they feel very vulnerable. And when they are away from the mother or the parent, they feel uncomfortable a lot of the time. So it's not something where they're manipulating you or they're trying to use you and cry. And it's not something that's just for nothing. It's because they know that they are more vulnerable when they are away from you, their human resource, their everything. So they feel much more comfortable when they are, you know, skin to skin, close. It actually, there are studies that show that it helps regulate their heartbeat. To have them close and to be checking on them, you know, prevents SIDS. And it helps their respiratory system. So there's a whole bunch of science as to why this happens. But in the moment, it can just feel like, oh my gosh, this baby never wants me to put them down, even though I bought this beautiful baby holder, baby bouncer. You know, and sometimes you have to put them down and you have to, you know, make yourself something to eat, or you have to, you know, go to the bathroom, even though I've definitely breastfed going to the bathroom before because I didn't want to wake my baby up or I didn't want my baby to cry. So you do your best, but it's hard to explain in the newborn stage how much attention this baby needs and how much it needs of you. And to top that all off with the fact that you're not sleeping and you're waking up every 2 hours to check on your baby, change your baby, feed your baby, you are exhausted and running on fumes, and then you're holding your baby all the time. Like, it's a lot. It is a lot. That newborn stage is just a lot. And there's so many beautiful moments. Like, my baby does not fall asleep on my chest like how they did in that newborn time. And that was super special. But I was exhausted. I was like in survival mode, barely like how do people drive with a newborn baby? Like, I felt like hungover like some days. I was so tired. So that's very real. And to just give you an idea of this, imagine you have your baby that you're waking up with every 2 hours. Hopefully, maybe they nurse back to sleep, fall back to sleep easy enough so that you can get some sleep. And then you wake up. I'm doing that in air quotes because you've been awake. But let's say you finally get out of bed around 9. Now the baby is hungry and has to eat. And that's one thing that you have to think about. If you're not holding the baby because they want to be sleeping, and again, this isn't every baby. Some baby's going to do better with a bassinet or a crib or being put down. But some babies do want to be held. So just something to keep in mind. And so if you're not holding them because they're sleeping, now they're hungry and they want to eat. So you're waking up, it might be, I'm awake, now my baby's awake, my baby wants to eat for 45 minutes, now I have to change my baby's clothes because maybe they spit up or something, change the diaper, and then finally, you know, maybe go into a different room, my baby's awake, put them down, put something in the toaster while I run to brush my teeth, run to put a load of laundry in the wash. Now my baby's crying. My thing in the toaster is getting cold because I'm now feeding the baby again. By the time they're done feeding, now they're asleep. So I'm holding them while they sleep. And I'm maybe having somebody else like put cream cheese on my bagel so I can eat it with one hand while I'm bouncing on the ball while my baby's sleeping. And then the baby wakes up and now they're hungry. And so then I'm feeding the baby and now I'm exhausted. The baby falls asleep. I try to get a nap in while my baby's napping. And now it's lunchtime and I have to try to make food again. Put the baby down, run to try to make something. Baby's crying. Didn't have time to finish making it. End up just having a bowl of cereal. And now my baby's hungry again. Feed the baby. Like, you're just constantly feeding them, changing them, holding them, and trying to get the things that you're trying to get done in between. So if you just do the math, with a baby having to eat every 2 hours and then also sleeping, let's say 80% of the day because they're sleepy little creatures at the beginning. If you're holding them while they eat and you can't put them down when they're sleeping, you are holding them all the time. And that's just the reality of it. And you're trying to, you know, do the things that you need to do while you can get those tiny, tiny moments. So when it comes to things like brushing your hair or, you know, flopping the laundry over from the washer to the dryer, which I forget to do all the time with the baby. It just, things slip your mind and things just, like, you're in this daze and you're like, what, like, did I do that? I thought about doing it. And then you're laying in bed at night and you're like, I don't think I actually did that. I thought about brushing my teeth, but did I actually brush them? I don't know. And this is real. This is just very, very real. And time just gets bizarre in the newborn days, and it gets easier and the baby you know will get more comfortable with other people holding them, will get more comfortable as they get bigger and more secure in their own body, being put down. Those moments of them being okay, you know, in maybe a little bouncer or something that is, like, you know, visually interesting to look at, those get longer as they get older. But the beginning, not so much. That's how it was for us. My baby wanted to be breastfeeding constantly, and that's normal. I don't know if I mentioned cluster feeding as this episode goes on, but he would actually wake up if my nipple slipped out of his mouth. So his napping and eating was like all one continuous, like, 3 hour span. And I couldn't do anything because if my nipple even moved, he would wake up. He's still a super light sleeper, actually. So we'll talk about that in the sleep episode. But I definitely want to mention those things about that newborn routine and schedule, because it's a hard thing to even, like, wrap your mind around it when you're not in it, because it seems so insane, because it is. Okay, the last thing I want to talk about, because I talk about some of the newborn I don't want to say medical, but kind of like bodily things that you might be noticing. There's a new one to add to the list, and I'm going to butcher this name, but I think it's called mulcusis, and it looks like little tiny, like, pimples, but it's not like baby acne. It's different. They stay, and they're kind of like just raised bumps on the skin. You can Google image it. Again, I'm not a healthcare provider. Talk to your pediatrician or someone who is you know, qualified to give you this information, but my son had them and they are kind of annoying. They can be really tough to get rid of. It's not a super big deal. It's just like a little virus. But they are contagious and you can't like have them pop or they'll spread and it's the whole thing. But if you're noticing these clear little bumps on your baby, maybe ask about that. And I think that wraps it up. The last thing I wanted to mention was music and how much music helped in the newborn stage. We played White Noise or Ocean Waves constantly, all the time. We still play it every time he falls asleep. And we have this little music box that came in a hedgehog, and I'll link it below because it's amazing. It vibrates and it's a music box, and my son is obsessed with it. But that music box cues him that it's time for him to go to sleep. So we play it during his naps and when he goes to sleep at night, and he knows that when that comes on, it means that he's, you know, supposed to be winding down and getting ready for nap time. And then there's also another playlist that we have that I'm looking up right now on Spotify for the name of, because it's such a lifesaver. It is called Rockabye Baby. I'll put that again in the notes. But it's lullaby renditions of songs that you would know. So instead of, I'm not a huge fan of like the like playing Mary Had a Little Lamb like constantly or Baby Shark, like that's just going to drive me insane. So we play this Rockabye Baby and it's songs that you would know. Like they have everything from the Beatles to Elton John, Lady Gaga, like John Legend, all of these songs. And they're just in lullaby form. So it's a lot easier to listen to because it's kind of a fun game. You can try to like guess what song it is. And my son loves these songs and we play them in the car because he hates the car seat. That's a whole nother thing. We'll get into the travel episode. Not every baby loves a car seat. And we'll also play it for him if he's just fussy. But they're two different playlists. So he has his fussy songs that like kind of make him happy. And then he has his calm down songs. And we'll use those, you know, like I mentioned, going to the pediatrician or things that are just a little tough, bring the music and it's just a comforting thing. So I think that is everything for this preamble to the real episode. But the newborn phase is just something that I feel like you need all the help that you can get. So I hope that this is helpful and I will be back soon, but you're about to hear more from me. So enjoy and help. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of On the Long Days, and we are going to talk about all things newborn. So this is really that first 3 month period that goes right along with the postpartum period, but in this episode I'm going to kind of focus on the baby and the relationship with you and the baby and the things that you might go through during those first 3 months, which there's a lot that happens those first 3 months. So I'm breaking this into a couple different things with the postpartum episode, newborn episode, then I'm going to have a postpartum anxiety and depression episode and a sleep episode and a breastfeeding episode. So all of those things really go along with the journey of those first 3 months. But I wanted to have a episode where I talk really about the baby and things that might be happening with the baby those first 3 months, because there's a lot. There's so much that is changing, and this is when your relationship with your baby is really starting. And so there's so much to figure out when it comes to, you know, how to change the baby, how many outfits to have for the baby, what is normal as far as like spitting up and burping and sleeping, and what crying is normal and what crying means that they're uncomfortable. It's like you're learning how to read your baby. You're learning your baby's personality and you're kind of like starting the secret language between the two of you to be able to communicate and to figure each other out. So it's a beautiful time, but it's a difficult time because I'll get into the sleep episode. And with the breastfeeding episode, I mean, you're running on fumes these first 3 months, especially because you are waking up at night to be able to feed the baby and you're not getting, you know, this consecutive sleep. So it can also be an emotional time because you want so much to be present and to be like sitting in these beautiful moments with your baby, but you're so tired that you're kind of like running on fumes and like just barely functioning some days. Because when you're not sleeping, I'm going to talk about this in the sleep episode because I feel like this is so important. You're just like, you can't be your total present self without sleep. And to have the expectation that you're going to be able to be like the shiniest, brightest version of you during this period is just, you know, you're healing, you're like re-regulating your REM cycle, you're firing on all cylinders sometime. You're in like the survival mode. So really being gentle on yourself, letting go of the I shoulds, don't should all over yourself, as some would say, and letting go of expectations of what this period has to look like. Because it's going to push you in ways that you could have never predicted. Because you're like, when you're so tired, you're less patient, you're less able to be like totally rational in your own brain. So you're just on this hypersensitive place. And this is a good time to jump into my experience. Like the first time I had to get into a car with my newborn, and my husband was driving and I was sitting in the back seat, and I was so hyper aware of every car driving, how fast they were driving, like how it was like I had never been in a car before. The way that I was analyzing everyone around us, I was in this hypersensitive, aware state of like, how dangerous is this situation? How comfortable is my baby? This is my baby's first time in the car. And I will say to this, it sounded so silly to install the car seat like way before the baby's due date, like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks. And we didn't do that. We did it after we had the baby because, I don't know, we just should have done it sooner. I just like, I don't know why we didn't, to be honest with you. But I would really recommend putting the car seat in and like watching YouTube videos of how to install your car seat and how to put the baby in the car seat, like how the strap should be. There's actually an amazing Instagram account called, I think, Safe in the Seat. I'm going to link it here in the show notes, that she goes over like all these safety precautions and tips and tricks for having your baby safely in the car seat. Because I don't even know the statistic, but it's a very large statistic of people who install car seats incorrectly. So of course we waited, don't ask me why, until the morning of our pediatrician appointment to put in the car seat. And it was not clear from the instruction manual in the car seat how to put the car seat in. And it just ended up being this thing that was stressful that definitely didn't have to be stressful. And I didn't realize how hard it was going to be to get my baby like in the harness of the actual car seat. Like I felt like my brain was not even working and I couldn't figure out like the comfortable way and the safest way to like have him go into the car seat. And I know this sounds like silly, but this is why I talk about like in the second trimester, maybe the beginning of the third trimester, doing these things like putting in the car seat, because your brain is like clear and you're able to like logically follow instructions. By the time I had had my baby, like my brain was halfway in the room and halfway out the room. Like it just was, everything was harder. So definitely do that and watch like enough videos that you feel confident and comfortable being like, oh, I'm definitely going to nail this once my baby is here. Because I was already so stressed out about the pediatrician appointment, and we had to drive like 45 minutes, which seemed far since we hadn't even left the house in 5 days. And it was, yeah, it was just the first time in the car with the baby. So I was already stressed out enough. So talking about that first pediatrician appointment, what you can expect is, hey, here's a tip. You're going to bring your baby in the car seat into the appointment. Because again, my half brain was like texting a friend being like, how do I bring this baby into the doctor's office? Like, am I supposed to carry this baby? You bring in the car seat? Are they going to look at me weird if I bring a car seat in? Like, I could not like rationally figure out how to get this baby into the doctor's appointment. So it turns out you bring in the car seat. So that's what we did. And then you have to take the baby out of the car seat. And they usually are going to ask you to undress the baby. I would always bring a muslin blanket. This is a good tip, because I would lay the baby on the muslin blanket instead of putting them down on the hard, cold table. And then you're not like putting them on that scratchy paper, and it just like felt like more comfortable to have them like less on the surface with the germs, and in a blanket that already smelled like our house. I just felt like it was like a nicer experience for the baby. So I would always bring a muslin blanket, put that down, put the baby on the muslin blanket. They would ask if they could do the rectal temperature, and unless the baby felt like they were sick, or I brought them in specifically because they were sick, I always had them do the armpit, because I know it's a more accurate read if you do it rectally. And that's why I would put in the Newborn Essentials podcast that I'm going to record that you should have a rectal thermometer to use at home. But if I wasn't nervous about a fever, I didn't see the point in doing a rectal temperature check. So I'd always just have them do it under the arm, which they were very understanding about. And then you have to weigh the baby, and then you have to put the baby on the paper to have them mark off the height of the baby. So I feel like there's stress during those first appointments because you're wanting to see your baby gain weight, right? That's like the thing that you're most concerned about. Is my baby healthy? Is my baby gaining weight? Because that's showing kind of like in a way how breastfeeding is going, how much food they're actually getting is why you're going so often to the pediatrician at the beginning, because they're looking to see a consecutive weight gain, that you're moving like in this direction that's showing that the baby is getting enough food. Because there's so much anxiety around like when you're breastfeeding that you can't see how much liquid the baby's swallowing. Like this is like if you're exclusively breastfeeding, especially like not pumping at all, the proof of the baby feeding comes through the fact that they're gaining weight, which again, I'm going to get into in the breastfeeding episode. But you definitely, like as a parent, want to, you know, see the baby gaining weight. And luckily in our situation, that was something that was happening at every appointment. But that first appointment, I just felt like this baby is so tiny and so brand new. And this is the first time we brought him out of the house, and he didn't love it. He was like crying. And also you have to wait. Like that is a bummer. Like you're waiting in the waiting room. And this might sound like silly, but I'm just saying it because, you know, bringing little toys, the first appointment's too early for toys, but eventually like bringing things to distract the baby, because at times we've had to wait 30 to 45 minutes for the doctor to actually come into the room and see us. So I would breastfeed pretty often in those first few appointments, because that was my way of like just being able to calm the baby down. Another good idea is if there's a sound machine that your baby likes, bringing that in so that they just have that familiar sound, because they're in this like room that's probably a lot brighter, a lot more stimulation than they're used to at home. So it is kind of like the perfect place for them to lose it, because they're like, what the heck is going on? You know, they're getting undressed and having to be in this different environment. So it's tough for them. And I also want to talk about an experience that we had where they did a hearing exam. I don't think it was at the first appointment, but it was in the first few weeks. And Reef failed, I'm using like air quotes, that exam, and they didn't tell us anything about it. They just said he failed. They had another technician come in to try to do it, and they said, okay, we're done. And I said, okay, are we good to go? They said yes, and then somebody ran out following us in the parking lot and handed us this piece of paper for a specialist to go see, because our son failed his hearing test. And I was like so distraught in the car. Like, sorry, I was just like covering my face thinking about it. That's why if my voice got messed up. It was terrifying. I was like, the way that a parent's mind goes in those first like few moments, I was like, okay, so our son can't hear. First, I'm thinking of like every instance in my head of like, the dog barked, he didn't move. Is that proof that he can't hear? Wait, he calmed down once when I play this song. Is that proof that he can hear? Like my mind was going insane. And then I was like, okay, there's a school for the deaf and the blind not too far from us. He'll go there. I'll learn sign language. Like just like so like spiraling. And then I was like, I'm calling my midwife, because thank God she's like my saving grace in any of these situations. And I am so grateful for her. Again, a reminder of why you should have someone who's there to support you, that you can go to in these situations, which at the time was not our pediatrician. To be honest, I still don't love our pediatrician, but luckily I was able to call her and tell her what happened. And she said to me, "Shay, I have 5 kids. All 5 of them failed that hearing test because the baby is so small, they can't stay still and they're wiggling around." And again, there might be a situation different from this that is a more serious situation, and I'm sorry if you're going through something like that. In this case, my baby was just moving around too much, so they couldn't get an accurate read. And that's what she was trying to tell me, that if the baby is really new and wiggly, it's really hard to get an accurate hearing test, so it comes out as a failed hearing test. And she said, you know, you can have them redo the test, you know, in a few months to get a more accurate reading. Or, you know, in my case, I didn't feel like I had to run to that specialist, and the truth is I didn't. Reef can hear fine. But I just felt like you're a new parent and everything is so scary. And in that moment, I would have appreciated if somebody had explained to me, you know, it's very common for you to fail. Don't, you know, think anything of it if he doesn't pass this. And, you know, just like explaining things, because I don't know what the heck is going on. I'm just trying to figure out my day to day at this point in, you know, my life. So just, again, having that person you can call in times, especially during those first 3 months, because there's a lot to figure out. There's just a lot to figure out. Even if you read every book, if you watch every video, if you do all the education courses, there's still going to be stuff that you're going to have questions about. So to get into that, a few more things that we experienced were, the first night went very, side note, when you go to the pediatrician, make sure you have extra diapers and wipes, because there was one time we were so tired that I thought Dan grabbed the diaper bag and he thought I did, and we drove 45 minutes to the pediatrician. And of course, our son would poop all over himself on the way to the pediatrician. We'd get there, you have to get them naked, he's covered in poop, now I have to clean him up before they go on the scale. And we went there, same thing happens. I go to reach for the diaper bag, neither of us packed it. So I am using wet, like, hand napkins that are in the room with us to try to get all the poop off of him. And then I have to like ask the physician's assistant if they have an extra diaper there, because we are these crazy parents who forgot their child's diaper bag. So learn from us and always double check and expect that the other person did not remember the diaper bag. So these things happen in the first few weeks, okay? You're very tired. Okay, so the first night tends to be a better night because the baby is tired from being born. So just like they tend to sleep a little bit more. We're not going to get into it too much in this episode, but usually, especially those first few weeks, you're waking up every 2 hours. There's a stretch, like a 3 to 4 hour stretch that you can do like once every 24 hours. But other than that, you're waking up every 2 hours. So you're waking up a lot. But the first night, the baby can actually go like 6 hours with doing a full stretch of sleeping because, again, they're so tired from the birth. So a lot of the times, like, you have this false sense of security with the first night with the baby because you're like, oh, that went pretty well. And then the second night comes. And unfortunately, the second night, our baby had so much congestion from amniotic fluid, which this wasn't like a complication from the birth. This is just like they're learning how to use their lungs for like breathing because they weren't having to do that while they were inside of the body, of the birthing person's body. So they're like learning how to breathe really on their own, and they still have some of that amniotic fluid sometimes in their lungs and in their kind of like nose, like it's like this congestion. And that's what happened the second night, that our baby got so congested that he could not breastfeed, which was my like go-to at that point to get him settled and to sleep. So he was just like kind of like snorting a little bit and uncomfortable, and then frustrated that he couldn't feed. And it was miserable. Like it was one of the worst nights that we had with him, because the panic that you feel when you can't calm the baby and they're crying and they can't eat, it was so stressful. Again, I called my midwife and she reassured me that that was normal. And we used, this is like one of my all caps, all bold, asterisk must have items, is the Frida nose sucker. I don't know the actual name of it. I'll put it in the show notes. But it's basically this tube. It looks disgusting, but you need to have it. It goes inside the baby's nose and then you suck and it draws out any of the boogers or like amniotic fluid, whatever, whatever's making them congested. It kind of like gently pulls it out of their nose. And it is amazing. And thank God we used that and it was so helpful. So after that first night, we kind of got back on track, and I, you know, would just kind of wake up and do most of like the nighttime stuff because I was exclusively breastfeeding. Again, we'll get into that with the sleep episode, breastfeeding episode. But some other things that your baby might experience are clogged eye ducts. So that's going to look kind of like if you've ever seen like conjunctivitis. It's really gross looking and can send you into a panic when you see it, because it's basically like the baby's like eye duct, their tear duct gets clogged, and then this mucus ends up coming out of it, and then it goes across their whole eyelid, and then if they're sleeping or something or their eye is shut, it crusts over, and then they go to open their eye and it's this crusty mucusy goo that then they cannot open up their eyeball or their eyelids, and it looks disgusting. It looks worse than what it is to deal with. Here is where I say, I am not a medical professional. I am not your child's doctor. I am not seeing your child in this moment virtually. And so it's really important that, like, take this with a grain of salt. If you are more concerned than this, like, you know, take your child to a professional, please. Like, this is not medical advice. This is just my experience. My child had the clogged eye duct. I sent photos to my midwife and she told me to use a warm compress to kind of be able to clear any crust so my baby could open their eye. And then also to put breast milk into the tear duct, and that would help. And it did. So I put, every time I changed the baby or did the warm compress, I would also put the breast milk in their eye. And within a few days, it was good to go. And it happened in both of their eyes. And every time it happened, I just did the warm compress and did the breast milk. And it worked. It cleared up. It looked really disgusting, but it wasn't that huge a deal, thank goodness. Another thing that happened was the baby acne that happened with Reef. Probably like 4 or 5 weeks postpartum, he got like the little pimples, little red pimples on his face and on his body. And again, it kind of just like, is their body adapting to life outside of you? And just came and went, wasn't a huge deal, wasn't anything that I really did for it. And then another thing that happened later, around like 3-4 months postpartum, was cradle cap, which I had never heard anyone talk about this. So cradle cap looks like dinosaur scales, like this scaly crust on your baby's head, on their scalp. And you're gonna want to pick it off so bad, or else I did. I was like holding myself back. But the thing is, it's like pretty stuck on there. It's not like dandruff that you can kind of like flake off. It's really kind of like, I don't want to say attached, but it's on there, the baby's head. So there's a Frida cradle cap kit that I highly recommend. It's made up of 2 different brushes and a sponge. And what you do is, I got this Happy Cappy shampoo on Amazon. I'll put that. And I washed Reef's hair with it. And then I take the sponge in this kit, and you do like little circles with the sponge around the cradle cap, and then you take the flip side of the sponge, which has these little like brush It's basically like a soft brush. And you do little circles on the cradle cap again. Then you wash the hair out. And now the top of the head has kind of been like exfoliated. And then there's a little bit of a harder comb. And it doesn't hurt the baby or anything. Reef did totally fine with it. And he's pretty sensitive to this stuff. And then you, while I was still in the tub, I just lightly brushed the cradle cap to lift it up off of the scalp and get it out of the hair. A good amount came off. It's one of those things where, like, even if you see it kind of like a couple spots, there might be more of it than what you think. And it's a little gnarly to see it come out, but it was fine. And I did have to do that treatment to him like probably 3 or 4 times. And then once he became like 6 months old, he didn't really get it anymore. But those first few months I had to do it a few times. And yeah, I didn't know anything about cradle cap, so you're welcome, because no one told me about it. So that's how we dealt with that. And then actually one of my nieces got it, and I was able to help my sister do the same with her. Another thing that you want to look for is heat rash. So babies' body temperatures are super sensitive during the first months of their life. And we lived in Florida, and I had to get out of the house at some point because I was going insane. And I would put my baby in the wearable, like baby be worn. Why can I not think of what it's called? Just the baby wear, I think. What, you know, baby wear. And I would put him in that and we would go walk around. Then we would come home and I would take him out. And I was like, oh no, he has a rash. And I didn't put it together until it took me like 4 days to realize that he was getting hot walking around, because I was wearing him. So the heat of my body plus the Florida weather was making him too hot. And he was basically like, what the heat rash is their sweat glands like get all confused and can't like totally regulate because their body temperature is going up. So basically, if your kid's getting heat rash, they're hot and you need to make adjustments to make them not heat up so much. I mean, I'm laughing, but it like wasn't a serious, it wasn't anything serious, thank goodness. But I was just like trying to figure out how to get out and to not have my newborn overheat. So I also bathed him because he was like a little bit more, he runs hot anyways. Like now knowing him the way that I do when he's almost a year old, like he will kick blankets and covers off. Like he is hot all the time. I actually just have him sleep in a diaper now because he just runs warm in general. Even in like the winter months, I will put light pajamas on him, but he really runs pretty warm. So he doesn't like to have anything on him that's making him hotter than he already is, which again is like a personality or individual baby thing. So you'll learn your baby and what they like. Is that everything? Sorry, I made like a little list of newborn baby things because there's, you know, this was all happening like within like weeks of each other. So it really seemed like every time we got something figured out, something else would come up. So that's kind of what you're navigating, your baby and how they're changing with their body. And another thing to figure out is kind of like that little belly button area because they have that little knob from the umbilical cord. And, you know, just keeping that nice and clean. I was advised to not give my baby a bath until after that fell off. So if your baby's spitting up a lot, you know, you can do like a little like with a wipe kind of like cleaning them up. But I was definitely happy when Reeves fell off because he was pretty stinky at that point, and I really wanted to give him a tub because, you know, they're getting like breast milk everywhere, and I wasn't able to like fully bathe him until that little stump fell off. So I was happy when it did. His actually started bleeding a little bit. To be honest, I think he was a little uncomfortable in his car seat, and it kind of like was rubbing up against his little umbilical stump. So I had to put some, I think, hydrogen peroxide. Again, this was a call to my midwife to ask her what to do. And yeah, it wasn't that big of a deal. It just fell off one day, and he kind of had like a little bubble, like almost like it looked like maybe a little like hernia, outie kind of thing. And the pediatrician said it was fine, and now it looks totally fine. But at the time I was like, I don't know if this is what this means, but it wasn't a big deal. So that was, you know, not really an issue at all. And then I'm going to give you a tip on changing your baby. So, okay, this might be a little TMI, but when your baby's first born, they're going to have meconium. So it's not like poop. It's how they go to the bathroom while they're in utero. And it's basically like this black tar. And you're going to notice it. I mean, it just, it's very sticky and very dark. And actually, Reef pooped on my husband as soon as he held him for the first time. It was very funny. But we still like have like a heating pad that has the meconium on it because we couldn't get it off. Because after he was born, he was wrapped in heating pad to like regulate his body temperature. But okay, sidebar. So how you deal with changing them with the meconium is you can use like, I used jojoba oil. You can even use like good quality olive oil. And that you just put on the weight. It helps you get off that meconium because with a wipe alone, it's pretty difficult. So you use the oil and it just helps clean the baby. And then even when I went to like put the diaper back on, I would still leave a tiny bit of oil because it just kind of like help me clear it for the next time. So doing that for the first few weeks, once it turns to like that kind of Dijon mustard colored breast milk poop, you don't really have to do that anymore. And then I didn't like believe it when anyone told me this, but there were definitely times we changed Reef in our bed, like on the mattress, because we were like doing our thing and just like we had some wipes and diapers on our nightstand and we just ended up changing him on the bed. I've heard of people doing this and I was always like, no, my baby will always get changed on the changing table and that's it. And like he will love it and that we bought it the special space for him, whatever. Like we were so tired, we changed our baby so many different places. But I would get a mattress protector because my baby has peed on me multiple times while I've been changing him on my mattress, and thank God we had the mattress protector or else my bed would be covered in pee. So I would get a mattress protector. I mean, you might breastfeed your baby in bed, you might do a lot of things in bed, and having a mattress protector is just a good safeguard to keep everything clean and urine free and maybe even poop free. You never know. Things get messy. Blowouts do happen. The other thing that I want to talk about is bathing your child for the first time. Lots of different ways to do that. They make many different things that can help you with bath time. Reef did not love getting tubs, so I actually ended up going in the bath with him and kind of like breastfeeding him to get him comfortable in the tub and then washing him. And honestly, we just take tubs together because it's way easier and that's just what we've done. But not to say that you can't use one of those, like some people, like I'll give you the one that we put on our registry. I forget what it's called, but like it's basically something that you put your baby in and it supports them while you fill up the tub with a little bit of water and you're able to kind of sponge bathe them like that. Another thing that I want to talk about is the relationship with your partner those first 3 months. So I would have the conversation with your partner that you're really not supposed to be having sex during those 3 months. And just what does that look like for you in your relationship? Again, I really talk about the importance of communication before you have and start life with baby, because once you're in those postpartum blurry days, like a lot of miscommunications can happen. So just being totally upfront with the fact that like that's off the table. So how can we still make special moments for each other, you know, without maybe being physical in the ways that we have been physical? And thinking about your daily routine, like my husband loves to go to the gym and for him, he like describes it as his therapy. It helps him just like get centered, and that's like something that he really wanted to be able to still do. And I love taking like showers. It just helps me reset. So our deal was he could go to the gym and I would get to do a shower every day. And I'm going to have a special episode called A Particular Child, because that's what we have. And I just call him particular because I don't want to label him as anything other than that, because he's perfect just the way that he is. But he for the first few weeks, this is not an exaggeration, would only let me hold him. And this lasted like probably those first 3 months of the newborn period. He would not fall asleep with anyone else holding him. He would not fall asleep in a stroller. He would not fall asleep in a car seat. He would only fall asleep if I was breastfeeding him or bouncing him on this bouncy ball. And it had to be me. And if I even tried to put him down in like a baby bouncer, he would cry. Like, he needed me pretty much 24/7. So again, like, you don't know how the postpartum period is going to go. You're assuming that you're going to have this schedule maybe that you have in your head. You have these expectations. Like, until that baby comes, you have no idea what you're in store for. And you can go into it with the best plans of like, yes, we've got this. You're going to the gym. I'll have my daily showers. We're good to go. And for us, we thought we were going to nail the postpartum period, and it definitely was a struggle. I definitely had moments of like, this is so overwhelming. Like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know like how to make any time for myself. I don't even know how to make a meal. I would have so much postpartum anxiety of like, am I going to get to eat today? Like, when am I going to be able to, like, if you can't put your baby down and you can't use both of your hands, like, how do you make food? How am I going to go to the bathroom? Like, there were days, I'm not going to lie, I peed while I breastfed because I couldn't put my baby down, like, or I just got him to sleep. And this is very real. Like, there are moments where your laundry is going to be piled up to your waist and you'll have wash in the washing machine that you have to rewash 3 times because you can't even remember to stick it into the dryer. And your baby's crying and you didn't brush your teeth that day. And that is like, that's the newborn period where you are literally just taking it hour by hour by hour. And then you're getting all in your head of like, I have to do this for the rest of my life. Like, those are the thoughts that you have. And it does get easier. But that first postpartum period of with the newborn is like, whoa, it's so much to figure out, so much that's changing, so much that you're learning about yourself and your baby and your relationships, every relationship in your life. And it tests you on every single level. So yeah, that's why I'm covering so much on this podcast about that first period of parenthood, because it will rock you. And I honestly just get so infuriated when I see on social media these pictures of like celebrities who gave birth 5 days ago and they're glorified for like looking exactly like they did, you know, before they got pregnant and being out, you know, on the town. And it's like, it sets the standard. You know, I'm not mad at that person for doing that if that's what they felt like doing and that felt good for them. I'm just mad at the standard that it sets, that everyone has to bounce back and that it must be so easy because look at this person who looks exactly like they did and looks like so beautiful and done up, and like it must be so easy for them. And I just think there's not an honest dialogue right now about what the postpartum newborn period is. And everyone has their own experience, and maybe some people do have like a really easy go. I don't know, but I know I felt so lonely and isolated during those first few weeks of like, how come nobody told me this. And again, this is coming from somebody who got trained as a doula, had worked with babies since I was 15 years old, and felt really confident going into parenthood. So I don't know, that just is why I really wanted to do this podcast, because I just wanted a place to be able to say, does anybody else feel like this? Or did anyone else need this information? I don't know, maybe it's even more for me just therapeutically to just blurt it all out. Who knows, but I'm hoping it hits even one person, because I know I could have used it. So yeah, that's kind of it for that newborn period. Another thing that I would say is try a bunch of different binkies, which I'll get into with the newborn essentials, but just because your baby doesn't like one binky doesn't mean that they're not going to like a different one. So nipple shapes do matter, and try, like, literally get like four different kinds of binkies, because binkies felt like a lifesaver to us when our baby took a binky in the car. Was like, made our life a lot easier. Yeah. So we're going to get into all the rest of the things, but I definitely felt like I needed to do this newborn episode. So I hope that it was helpful. And if you are having a long day, I feel you, and you are not alone. We had yet another day where I had to pull over four times, because my baby hates the car and, was getting pretty worked up, and I don't like to let him just do that and be by himself. So I pull over and I comfort him and I take some deep breaths, because long days. Am I right? So okay, I am signing off, and I'll see you guys next week. I think we're going to cover breastfeeding. So I hope that you're able to take a few moments for yourself, take a deep breath, and take a deep breast. Yeah, take a deep breath. And know that you are doing your best, and that, you know, you deserve to have a few moments for yourself, even if it's while you pee. Okay, I will talk to you later. Bye.